Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network. It's the fly on the wall of free speech, because we sit here and we look at what's going on, and we're on the fly. It's on the fly. So go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send badly needed fundage to 22 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Phone it into 1-800-724-2719. Extension 3. Okay, today, as promised, we've got Philbert. Philbert, welcome to the show.
Hello there, and glad to be here.
Well, it's glad to have you here. So you've been going around a bit. You want to tell us a little bit about what you've been up to lately?
Yeah, I've been out and about. I took a trip to meet some people from a pro-white organization I'm a part of called the National Alliance. I'm sure some people hopefully are familiar with that. I mentioned them a time or two. I try not to harp on it too much, but you know, there's a lot of organizations. You know, you got the Proud Boys, and which are kind of, you know, I don't want to discourage people from joining any pro-white organization, but as far as all the organizations go, I think this one, the National Alliance, is the only one that I've found that is facing our problems, which is, you can largely attribute to Jewish power and the other issues. They're the only organization that is facing this head on, and they're building a community and actually, you know, having, I guess you could say, facts on the ground, and we're actually trying to do something about it. So I'm a member of this organization called the National Alliance, and they're building a community in northeastern Tennessee. And it's just a beautiful area on top of that, you know. So I did take a trip down there, and I spent some time down there and volunteered. This organization is the one that was founded by Dr. William Luther Pierce, and they're building a library for researchers, you know, that in the future, you know, as freedom of speech gets eroded away even further, they're trying to build a library, a place where, you know, people that are interested in factual history can go and do research. And they're in the middle of building this. I went and did a little bit of labor and just volunteered, and as I said, it's just a beautiful area, and it was a good time. So I've just got back from doing that, and if anybody's interested in that, you can go to natall.com. That's natall.com, and you can read more about it. And I would encourage people that can look into that.
And for 4 years or so, I was on Stormfront Radio with Jay Hess, and Jay Hess calls into shows on RBN from time to time, and Jay is a longtime member of the National Alliance. I guess you're aware of that?
Yes, I do recall that, yes.
Yeah.
And, I have never met Jay himself, but I do recall that listening. I'm a longtime listener of Stormfront myself.
Well, you know, he's a musician. If you ever do meet, the two of you could get together. The name Stormfront was originally what he thought would be the good name of a band, but he's got a band, and he's doing a lot right now with music as well. I was contacted not too long ago, a few weeks ago, by Don Black, who wants to get the band back together figuratively. He's thinking of maybe getting an RBN show, and you know, that would involve himself and Jay Hess, and I could have a role in it, and maybe some other people. So that's all.
Well, that sounds like a good time.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and Jay used to talk about the National Alliance, and you know, I'm not terribly familiar with it, but who's the founder?
So it's by a gentleman named Will Williams, and he's been on Dr. Duke's show once, at least. I don't know if it's more than once, but once that I recall, and I got to meet Mr. Williams while I was down there, and he was telling me the story about how he was just getting ready to get into the shower when Dr. Duke called him and wanted him to come on his show in 20 minutes.
Yeah, he doesn't exactly schedule guests. It's,
well, sometimes, you know, to be fair, these things happen at the last minute, and, you know, you need a guest.
Yeah, yeah. And now, what's the connection of National Alliance with William Luther Pierce?
It's the organization he founded in the mid-70s. I think it was 1970 was the first issue. Dr. William Luther Pierce came out with a magazine called National Vanguard, and he was self-published, and he distributed that himself. He found a mailing list, and he mailed that out, I believe, and it's still around today. It's called nationalvanguard.org, where there's articles, and it's ran by National Alliance members. So you can check out that too at nationalvanguard.org. They have great articles. It's a very pro-white organization. But it was started by Dr. William Luther Pierce in 1970, I believe. So it's one of the oldest continuous running pro-white publications, I guess you could say.
And then how does it go from National Vanguard magazine to the National Alliance? What's the connection there?
So the National Alliance is the actual organization in and of itself, and National Vanguard.org is it's just the publication where there are lots of people that write articles, and they're, you know, related to the issues that we're facing. There's lots of stuff on religion and philosophy, and there's a weekly podcast done by Kevin Alfred Strom, if anybody is familiar with who that is, and I think it's good. It's called American Dissident Voices, which is also something Dr. Pierce has been doing for many years. I don't exactly know when he started doing that, but it's been going on for a long time.
You say Dr. Pierce, he was a physicist, right? A physics professor?
He was, yes, correct. I believe he taught at he's got a PhD in physics, so it's nothing to sneeze at. And I believe he taught at the University of Boulder, Colorado.
Okay. Yeah, University of Colorado at Boulder, perhaps.
Yes.
Yeah, which is, you know, that's a serious school, and physics is a serious, it's not like political science or economics, it's serious science. So that's
also he was the author of the Turner Diaries. I'm sure there's many people familiar with that. You know, this was the same gentleman that was the author of the Turner Diaries and the book Hunter as well, which is sort of a sequel to the Turner Diaries.
Yeah, and I haven't read the Turner Diaries. I have a slight familiarity of what the story's about, but okay, so you've got that. And Dr. Pierce, he died sometime around the turn of the millennium. When did he die?
So he died in 2002, unfortunately. He got to see 9/11, and he did a couple shows on 9/11, and he had cancer, and I believe he kind of retired shortly afterwards. And his untimely death was – and you know what? His birthday, speaking of that, his birthday was actually on September 11th, so – you can celebrate his birthday rather than celebrating, you know, the Jew terrorist attacks or Jewish inspired terrorist attacks, however you want to look at it. I don't think Osama bin Laden did it, but that's just me. But nonetheless, he died on in 2002.
Okay, 2002. And those podcasts he used to do, which I don't think were referred to as podcasts back when he did them. I guess it was some sort of radio show or something.
Yeah, it was done on AM. It was done on AM radio. Kind of like, who was it? Rush Limbaugh.
And this, you can still find them. I mean, I found some on YouTube back in the day. I don't know if you could find them on YouTube, but I'm sure you could find them somewhere, you know, Rumble or wherever you could find these. And they stand up pretty well to the test of time, right?
Yes, I agree. He's a very well-spoken man, and he was very ahead of his time. If you listen to this, he's spoken on lots of very good subjects, like, for instance, the kosher issue, like it's regarding the food, you know, the food tax stamp that we all have to, you know, have. Anything you buy in the grocery store is going to have a kosher symbol, which, you know, you could buy the Kosher-tified app and maybe get around that. Is that still around?
It's under different management, and I don't have any connection with the new management, but I believe it's still available. And
okay. Well, that's a good option, at least.
The basic idea is totally awesome. So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so he did stuff on the kosher, I remember. That was probably one of my first things. I found him in the early, about 2010, 11, somewhere. Me personally, that's when I first started listening to him hardcore, along with Dr. Duke. And they make a good combination. But I feel Dr. Pierce was way ahead of his time. He wrote a book on, you could say, philosophy. It's called Cosmotheism. And I hate to call it a religion, but it's somewhat akin to a belief system, I guess you could call it. And he was just ahead of his time. And his, like you said, his stuff stands the test of time. It's aged very well. And, you know, this whole organization is based off of his works. And, like I said, prior, we're trying to form a community in northeastern Tennessee. And, you know, I, like I said, I went and did some labor. They have a lot of property up there or down there, wherever you're from, I guess. And it is an expensive area. I won't deny that, but, I would love to live there. It's in the Appalachian Mountains, and it's a beautiful area, and they're trying to encourage, members to move down there also. So, but, anyway, what I'm getting at is this is one organization that's actually, doing something, you know, physically. And I'm not trying to downplay the work of all the other pro-white organizations that are down there, but my only point is in comparison, this, you know, we have property and they're actually, I think they're doing a little bit more in my opinion. So.
Mm-hmm. So I remember a caller to Stormfront once asking me if, you know, he was grilling me on William Luther Pierce and then asking me if I'd listen to his podcast, and he's saying I need to listen to like about 30 hours of them. Like, yeah, well, okay. So I listened to some and I thought, what? He's talking about all the same stuff I'm talking about. Of course, it was, you know, 20 years earlier. So I'll give that credit where credit's due. So, yeah, okay, interesting stuff. And of course, things do change. So, you know, it's not as if you want to turn somebody into a prophet and freeze their words. Or maybe you do. But anyway, that's interesting. What kind of work were you doing while you were at their location? You said a lot of hard physical labor?
Yeah, personally, you know, I'm in good shape. And, you know, as they say, you don't use it, you lose it. So, if, you know, you don't want to stand around and just lay in bed all day. But, yeah, I went down there and did some. So they're clearing out a bunch of land. Like I said, they're kind of in the woods up in the mountains. And, you know, they're building a lot of stuff. So there was a lot of wood that needed to be cleared out. We burned a lot of wood. Oy vey, we burned them. But we did that, and we poured some concrete at an existing place for a basement that will be a guest house for members and people that want to come and stay, just as I did. You know, there we have a house we're building, just stuff like that, building up an area, you know. So just general construction, I guess you could say.
Okay, well, that sounds really interesting. Now, Dr. Duke, yesterday, I'm kind of switching gears, but I think it's kind of related because you're doing this in northeastern Tennessee, which is in the Appalachian Mountains, and it's a very heavily white area. It's one of the whiter areas in the country, and especially east of the Mississippi, I guess it's one of the whiter areas. And Stormfront had a few conferences there that I had attended, you know, so we're talking about, you know, the Knoxville part of the state, as opposed to the Memphis or Nashville part of the state. So he sent me a video, and there's this YouTuber. Can I even find out what this YouTuber's name is? Let's see. I think his name's Nick Johnson. And he just, he goes, I think I've seen his stuff before. He just drives around, and he'll often drive into the hood. And I think I've seen some of his stuff from Memphis or somewhere, Baltimore. But he, you know, driving into the hood.
Yeah, he does some stuff in Pennsylvania, I believe, right? Like Philadelphia.
Okay. I think he goes
if we're
all
talking
over.
About the same guy that has filmed the people that are like the really bad areas of Pennsylvania that are around, or Philadelphia, I believe, that are heroines and junkies, and they're stooping over. If we're talking about the same individual.
I'm sure we are. It sounds like it. And this particular video was Jackson, Mississippi, which he proclaims as the worst place he's ever been to. And now this guy, he's not explicitly racial, but he does go to black. Maybe he goes to other bad neighborhoods, but in particular, he goes to these black neighborhoods and just kind of films what they look like and film people. I remember seeing one where he had run into some sort of youth gang. And, you know, it was a half dozen, maybe eight, nine of these young blacks who were probably teenagers. And maybe there were some that were over 20, but they were probably teenagers. And they were all, you know, waving their handguns around, and they were hooting and hollering and intoxicated on something. I felt a little bit nervous for the guy and saying some things. So I've seen that. I've seen that. But this, he drove around and you know, Jackson was, first of all the streets had massive potholes, very deep potholes that went down so far that they got into like the water system. And so you'd have, you know, the cracked water pipes, water mains underneath, and the water be bubbling out of the potholes, stuff like that all over the place.
Jeez.
Trash. I guess when he was there, the city had an issue with their trash collection company, which, you know, the trash is privatized, so nobody was picking up trash, and so there's trash everywhere. There was sewage was leaking onto the streets, and of course the regular ghetto type of stuff of abandoned, dilapidated, and crumbling buildings all over, and then just kind of, you know, like black people wandering around, maybe like a middle-aged woman who could be a junkie pushing a shopping cart down the street and stopping him and asking him for $1.50, just that type of stuff.
I'm sure that was just for a bus fare.
Yes, for a bus fare. I know. That's how it is. And so it's, you know, it's pretty interesting, pretty intense. Now, I had sent Dr. Duke a video last night as well. Before I had watched the one he sent me, I sent him one, and it was one that was shot in Africa, and it was really, really funny, and maybe a lot of people have seen this because I think it's gone viral, but there's some maybe 10-year-old African boy in a school uniform, and he's doing Michael Jackson dancing. And the song, I don't know what the name of the song is, but I'm familiar with it. It's the one, it's like, what is it? Eddie, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay, Eddie? I think that it's that one.
Annie.
Annie or Eddie?
Yeah, Annie.
Annie, are you okay? Are you okay, Annie? In the background, this 10-year-old African kid's doing Michael Jackson dancing. And of course, you know, part of it's grabbing your groin, right? He did it. And I say this to Michael Jackson fan. I'm a legitimate Michael Jackson fan.
That's
I like
a
Michael.
Smooth criminal. That's
okay. Okay. So he's doing this dance and of course he's grabbing at his chest.
For the first time since its inception, RBN is offering a limited opportunity to you, the listener, to join our quest. You will be provided an effective platform on both internet and satellite broadcasting, and also gain the opportunity to both share your creativity with our producers and voice your message with thousands of patriots. Interested? Call 800-724-2719, extension 3, for details.
People are getting stupid, and now there's proof. I'm Peter Serafine with another Liberty Minute. This year's spring edition of Intelligence Online reported on IQ tests of 18 to 60-year-olds. The online magazine has been doing this study for quite some time, and this year's report was the first time that the average IQ of Americans dropped. Usually, the average IQ went up 3 to 5 points every decade. This time it went down. Well, look at the age range, 18 to 60-year-olds. Anyone under 48 was educated entirely under the Federal Department of Education. Those who predate the Department of Education are aging out of the study, skewing the average. Do we really need any more evidence that government, especially the federal government, should not be involved in educating our young people? Instead of critical thinking, young people are being taught sexuality. Logic and reason have become political correctness. History is now critical race theory. This is starting to look a lot like the plot from the movie Idiocracy. And if you own a firearm, then you need carry insurance. Get the most affordable carry insurance on the market and save another 10% by using code LIGHTHOUSE at protectwithbear.com. Find more news and commentary at liberty-lighthouse.com. Until tomorrow, Sivis Pashem. Parabellum.
Antelope Hill Publishing is America's leading publisher of dissident books, bringing you a wide variety of new translations and original works on every subject, from the funding behind the transgender movement to firsthand memoirs of World War II previously inaccessible to English-speaking audiences. We publish books that mainstream publishers won't touch, full of information that challenges the political status quo. Whether you count yourself as a political dissident, student of history, connoisseur of philosophy, or enthusiast of exciting and thought-provoking fiction, you owe it to yourself to check out our catalog. With exclusive offerings like The Transgender Industrial Complex, Solzhenitsyn and the Right, The Open Society Playbook, Opioids for the Masses, and many more, there's something for everyone, and new titles are added every month. Check out our catalog today at antelopehillpublishing.com and use code RBNReaders2023 for 10% off your order. That's RBN Readers 2023 at antelopehillpublishing.com.
Right, he did it. And I say this to Michael Jackson fan. I'm a legitimate Michael Jackson fan.
That's
I
like Michael. Smooth criminal. That's
okay. Okay, so he's doing this dance, and of course he's grabbing at his groin, and he moonwalks, to the side, and then the camera pans over, and he's moonwalked in front of a porta potty, right? And he's banging at the door of the porta potty, and he's doing a Michael Jackson kick into the porta potty. He's trying to get in because he's got to go to the bathroom. That's why he's grabbing his groin, because he's got to go to the bathroom. And it's really, really funny. So. But, in the background, of course, is dilapidated buildings and stray dogs because it's in Africa. And the two videos, actually, they kind of make the same point that this is I don't know if I could say it's the natural state of blacks or Africans, but it is kind of what they're going to – it's what an all-black area is going to look like. An all-black area that has contact with whites is going to look like. So it's, at one point, whether it was during, segregation or Jim Crow or colonization, you get certain infrastructure and you get the expectations of certain infrastructure. And we're talking about roads, we're talking about water, we're talking about electricity, we're talking about sanitation. And then when the whites pull out, because they're forced to or asked to or whatever, when the whites pull out, that basic infrastructure is no longer maintained. And, you know, we can discuss why it's not maintained, but you can see this. I mean, so, you know, in most black areas, they are in close enough proximity to enough whites that, you know, the basics are going to be maintained. So if you're talking about St. Louis or Baltimore, Detroit or Cleveland or Oakland or whatever, there are enough whites and maybe in Oakland, you know, Asians in close proximity that they're paying into taxes, that the city councils have enough expertise or competence to be able to maintain at least that minimum level. In Jackson, there's not. And this wasn't all of Jackson, but it was like most of Jackson. I guess there are still some white neighborhoods within the city district that exist, and part of the reason they can exist. And by the way, Jackson has by far the highest murder rate. I mean, its murder rate is, I believe, twice that of Detroit's. And you know, the statistics, the top 10 murder cities were in America were all put up on the screen, and you know what you saw were all like, well, it was Jackson, which was a small city, and then the rest were St. Louis and Detroit and Baltimore and places that you would expect, Memphis, places with big black communities that have a lot of murder. So it's pretty bad like that. Anyway, we can discuss some of the reasons for this, and you know, and it's, I'd like to know what you think about it, and of course, you know, how does that jibe with you know, the National Alliance's desire to carve out some, you know, white, all white or mainly white or specifically white areas in the United States. So I kick it over to you, Philbert.
Yeah, well, that reminds me, what you were just describing kind of reminds me of that, you could say, famous meme that was circling around years ago, and that's still around, where it was a picture of, I think it was Detroit, you know, a before and after, say a picture in the 50s and a picture of what it looks like now with all the dilapidated and crumbling infrastructure and buildings, like you were describing. And then it also has a picture of nuclear bomb after we dropped it on Hiroshima in Japan, and then then and now. And you know, the point being that it's easier to recover from a nuclear weapon than it is to recover from diversity, right? So it's a very good point. It's a powerful meme, right? So the truth being told that diversity is a more deadlier weapon to society than a nuclear bomb would be. And I think that fits perfectly with what you were saying. It's harder to get rid of diversity than it is to recover from a nuclear weapon. And when you think about that, that's just amazing. And I don't think it could be argued. I mean, the pictures speak for themselves, and you don't even have to see the picture to even understand what I'm talking about, right? So that's just amazing. So it's what white places in the nation that are left, it's, you could say it's well worth fighting for, you know. It doesn't matter if you're going to be called what kind of names you're going to be called, it's worth fighting for. And especially it's your homeland, right? Like there was a famous Russian KGB defector. I don't know his name. I was going to say I forget it, but I don't even know it. But I remember in an interview, he said, you know, if communism ever comes to America, there's not going to be any place to defect, right? He defected from Soviet Russia to here, but there's not going to be anywhere for us to run, you know, like the Jews, where they had, you know, they could run to Israel, you know. It's like, we're not going to have anywhere to run. I mean, where are we going to run? You know, Canada? I mean,
it's, Russia?
Yeah.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Extendivite is more than just a heart tonic. Most basic diseases are caused by yeast in the gut and metals in the liver, and we all have a bit of both. The garlic in Extendivite has a yeast-killing effect in the gut while also helping the sulfur enzyme in the liver get rid of the metals. Extendivite just may improve your overall health. Products like Extendivite are the only way we are going to get our society healthy. And if you're waiting for the government and pharmaceutical care to solve your health problems, you're going to have a long, disappointing wait, I think. Extendivite is a complete formula for extended life in the new millennium. 80 can be the new 60. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a two-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com, or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Like the Jews, where they had, you know, they could run to Israel, you know. It's like, we're not going to have anywhere to run. I mean, where are we going to run? You know, Canada? I mean,
it's, Russia?
Yeah.
Russia, the irony, right?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, yeah. So I guess that would be point number one. As far as, so the National Alliance is trying to make, one of the goals that we're trying to do with the National Alliance is, a long time ago, there was briefly a part of Tennessee that seceded into its own state called Franklin. And a lot of people don't know this, including myself. I didn't know this until it was brought up. But it's possible that we could do that again, and then we could make our own laws again. And but I mean, you have to have, number one, race is the biggest thing. So we already have that taken care of in northeastern Tennessee. Secondly, you know, we have to have everybody on the same belief system. And one of the problems is, you can't, like I was saying, you can't worship your enemy's God and not have them rule over you. And a lot of people may not realize this, but Christianity does have Middle Eastern roots. And, you know, I don't say that to offend anybody, but it's one of the things that needs to be addressed. And that's another thing that National Alliance and Dr. Pierce himself was ahead of his time. He wrote a book called Cosmotheism, and it's, like I was mentioning earlier briefly, it's sort of a belief system, and it addresses this issue. You know, it you could call it scientific paganism, I guess, and it's a religion of nature, you know, and we don't necessarily pay mind to, you know, Jesus the Jew and This is something that needs to be addressed, and this is probably one of the biggest obstacles that we're going to face, because it's the hardest thing for people to, you know, admit that, you know, they may have been lied to, such as even talking about the Jews. Like Mark Twain said, it's easier to fool a man than to convince a man he's been fooled. And a lot of people, when they hear something, you know, that like they've been lied to their whole lives, even though it's not their fault, you can offer some kind of sympathy and tell them, well, look, this isn't your fault. But in most cases, they'll just try to deny it, right? Because they don't want to admit that they've been lied to. And, you know, when I'm talking to people, I try to do that. I try to offer some sympathy and realize, like, look, it's nothing personal. It's not even your fault. You know, it's because somebody else has lied to you doesn't mean that you need to, like, you know, take it personal and get mad at the person that's trying to wake you up. But anyway, nonetheless, like I was saying, addressing the Christian Zionism and the Christianity aspect of this is probably going to be one of the biggest issues that we have to change to have like a completely separatist white, you know, organization that isn't going to have any kind of Jewish influence at all, aside from the banking and monetary aspects of this either. So,
yeah, and it's an important question. It's a tough question. Now, I'm not really a religious person. I am trying to study and learn. I had read the Old Testament, the bulk of the Old Testament, at least. So I was pretty familiar with that. Right now, I'm belatedly looking at the New Testament. And, you know, people could come back and say, well, you can say Jesus the Jew, but at the same time, Jesus is reviled by Jews. Jesus is the enemy of the Jews. And,
well,
you know, during...
Well, so he's the king of the Jews also.
Well, is he the king? I mean, I'm not the theologian, so I'm not gonna be debating these. And the other thing with Christianity, proper people need to debate it. I'm not the proper person to debate this, but another thing is that we've had 2,000 years of European culture that was more or less synonymous with Christian culture. And, you know, you can look at the 1,000 years ago or so, the building of the cathedrals, which were just super, super impressive. And so, yeah, and there's been lots of downsides, absolutely lots of downsides to the Christian religion as well. But you know, European history, the bulk of European history that, you know, that we think of took place in this era of Christendom. So it gets complicated, and I'm not going to say what the answer is.
I guess in response to that, I would argue that, well, and this is an opinion, you know, we all have our own opinions, but I mean, evidence to me points that it was our biological entity as white people that we made Christianity work rather than Christianity, you know, made us the way who we are, because but before it wasn't largely, it was forced upon us, you know, through the Roman Empire and especially most of Northern Europe, and we got along just fine without it. But nonetheless, this belief system that I was talking about, which is called cosmotheism, you can order that from cosmotheistbooks.org, which is, you know, was written by Dr. Pierce. This is, and I wouldn't really even call it a religion. This is more of like a philosophy system. It's a religion of nature. And I myself, you know, like I said, I love spending time in nature. I guess you could call me a tree hugger. You know, I'm not big into the climate change stuff, you know, but, you know, nature is my religion, you know, and I guess I would, like I said, I would say it was whites that made Christianity work rather than the other way around. But anyway,
so that's a very valid question. Was it whites that made Christianity work, or was it Christianity that made whites work? And, you know, I think you have people like E. Michael Jones who are going to say, well, you know, it's Catholicism that created, but why not say, I mean, even before Catholicism, what did you have in white civilization? Well, you had the Roman Empire. You had Greece. So you already had all sorts of advanced civilizations and greatness.
Ancient Egypt, too.
And Egypt, yeah. Now, Egypt, the white white people of today are a mixture of, this is, you know, you can take it or leave it as you will, but to the extent you put any faith into these ancient genomics, you had people, farmers from the Middle East, move into Europe after the Ice Age and bring agriculture. And those people would have been, well, they would have been very similar to the Egyptians. They would have been racially similar to the Egyptians. And then later, say about the time the Egyptians were building pyramids, you had these a different race of people that were pretty distinct, who spoke the Indo-European languages, and they moved in. They had wheels and carts and domestic horses, and they moved in and conquered the agricultural people from the Middle East. And for the most part, Europeans are kind of a mixture of those two races. And so the one is the race that built the pyramids, right? And the other is the race that if not invented the wheel, that they effectively used the wheel. So you got that. So yeah, I mean, Egyptian, if you want to claim Egyptian culture for whites, and certainly in the era of the you know, post Alexander the Great, where you had literal Greeks ruling Egypt, yeah, if you want to claim that. Okay, so you still with me?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. One thing I wanted to mention, back in January 2017, I think it was right before Trump was inaugurated, I did this one show with Andrew Anglin. I haven't done very many shows with Andrew Anglin. I haven't had any contact with him since before Charlottesville. But one of the things he said on this particular podcast, and it was a pre-RBN version, a YouTube version of National Bugle Radio, and we were talking about the African population explosion. And one of the things he said about blacks, one of the biological things, is that they have, what is it that they're, what is that hormone that we manufacture inside of our bodies that make us feel happy and satisfied?
The dopamine?
Yeah, dopamine.
Serotonin.
Yeah, that their bodies will manufacture this in circumstances that would cause whites or presumably Asians a great deal of stress. So, you know, they can feel satisfied with their life in squalor.
Okay.
Now, you know, I have that on. He's a pretty serious person. He doesn't typically just make up stuff. But it, you know, my own experience with blacks, for instance, I think that there may be something to it. There's also something to their tolerance for violence, right? So, whereas probably whites and a lot of Orientals, if there's a violent situation around them, like people are about to get into a fight, they're going to want to stop it. Their attitude towards it's going to be very different. Whereas blacks, I mean, my personal experience going to a predominantly black school after desegregation was that they get excited, they get elated, a fight, you know, and they get elated by it. So there do seem to be some differences. And so I'm throwing that out there. I got one more thing I want to throw out about, you know, how you tell white neighborhoods and black neighborhoods apart, even when there's nobody out on the street. But what do you think about those little tidbits of information or conjecture?
Yeah, no, I would agree. I think you're right. I didn't know that about the dopamine, but as far as the fights go, I mean, they have a high testosterone and low impulse control. Even the women have a very high testosterone level. So that's where we, you know, they start hooping and hollering, and that's where we get the term chimp out from. I mean, they literally start to act like monkeys, to be fair, you know. So when they get in large groups and a fight breaks out. And I would just add real quick that I believe some of the tribes didn't allow in Africa, some of the tribes didn't allow their boys to reproduce unless they had murdered somebody, you know. So they almost were breeding violent genes intentionally. So I mean, that has to play a role as well.
So yeah, I'm not sure where you got that from, but I know that I've talked about that in the context of when Europeans came into contact with Zulus in South Africa. That was the practice among the Zulus, was that a young brave, a young warrior was not allowed to marry until he had killed an enemy in combat. And so you had that. And even in the 21st century, the I think they're called the Dinka people in Ethiopia. And these are the people whose the women have those plates in their lips, make them look like ducks. And
yeah, it looks like a hamster wheel.
Yeah. And the practice among the Dinka, even today in some areas where they're completely, well, where they're completely tribal, I was going to say feral, but that wouldn't be nice, is that, you know, periodically when there are girls who are of age to be married and it's time for them to be married, that an enclosure is constructed and any man desiring a wife, and you know they're polygamous, so they can have more than one wife. But any man desiring a wife strips naked, goes into the enclosure with nothing but a stick of their choosing. It can be big, it can be small, and then they fight for a while. They just beat each other with sticks. The only rule is you're not supposed to kill anyone, and so you beat each other with sticks for a while, and then they come out and stand there, and the girls who are in need of a husband will just walk over to whoever they choose.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's perfectly reasonable.
But I saw this. This wasn't something I saw on a right-wing website. This is something I saw in a big museum.
I believe you. I believe you.
And I think it was a National Geographic or similar kind of documentary that this came from.
Okay.
Yeah. So you got that. You know, in Africa in general, how widespread was this type of thing, these types of practices that would favor a violent temperament or at least tolerance to violence? I don't know. But, you know, the last thing I'll throw out on that topic is if there is a book called Negroes in Negroland, which was written maybe in the 1860s or so. And it was accounts. It was just a collection of accounts from Europeans and Arabs who had explored Africa. And just read that and maybe you'll have an idea of the, you know, the direction that Jackson, Mississippi is moving in. But okay. So getting back to Jackson, this is the last thing I think we can cover. I forgot the gentleman's name who made the video. What was his name?
I don't recall. I don't know. I'm just familiar with the content he's made.
Yeah. Yeah. And we mentioned him earlier, Nick Johnson. So Nick Johnson, who's not particularly, he's not overtly racial, but he must be to an extent covertly or implicitly. And he did say, explaining what's going on in Jackson, that after desegregation, a lot of rich people didn't like the idea of their kids going to the desegregated school, and so they left. And so everybody that was left behind, they were poor, and this is what happened. Well, okay, so you know, you could kind of use that as a proxy for saying that, you know, with the civil rights movement and whatnot, you went from a white-run city to a black-run city, and that's what happened. What I just want to point out is that civilization, to whatever level you have it, it requires upkeep, right? It requires an investment of labor, and it requires technical skill. So it requires investment of labor, and it requires technical skill. And if you look around, so for instance, you mentioned Hiroshima, you know, the nuclear bomb in Hiroshima. Well, the Japanese are industrious, meaning they are willing to spend a lot of time working, and they are capable of acquiring and even developing technical skills. And so they built back Hiroshima. I've been there. It's a very, very nice place. You wouldn't think it had been hit by a nuclear bomb. And then, you know, there are other places. I've been in Thailand, and I remember the subway in Bangkok. And I know the subway, unlike Japan or unlike Seoul or China, that the subway...
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org, smash that donate button like Russian peacekeepers smashing through the Azov neo-Nazi terrorists in the Donbass.
I don't think you can explain politics without looking at Jewish power any more than you can explain physics without dealing with gravity.
9/11 was a jointly conducted covert operation that involved multiple states, the Saudis, the Israelis, and what you could call the deep state in the United
with
States.
With anti-Semitic remarks.
yeah, you're jiggling juice, we used to say, the dancing Israelis.
So even the Republicans now are compromising, and they're pushing issues that are destructive to the white race.
They would always say, like, are we just going to talk about this stuff on the radio, and what are we going to do about it?
Either we force the democracy to work by actually getting the ballot access, getting the candidates, getting in office, getting our message out there to the people, or we expose just how undemocratic it is.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Here's some interesting news. Due to all the recent claims about possible nuclear wars, viruses, solar flares, and civil unrest, people are scrambling to prepare and stockpile food. But the one thing out of reach for many is an underground bunker. Until now. Because you can now have a 3D printed underground bunker in just one day. An excavator digs a hole in your backyard, and 3DBunkers.com shows up in a small truck and sets up their 3D printer under a tent completely undetected. They can print as many rooms as you want at a fraction of the cost compared to traditional metal bunkers. 3D Bunkers uses polymer concrete, which is 5 times stronger than regular cement. YouTube 3DBunkers.com and watch the video. The creators of 3D Bunkers is looking for a business partner that can help bring this technology to the world. And we need to protect our way of life without living in fear. Contact Brad at 3DBunkers.com for more details, or visit 3DBunkers.com.
And then, you know, there are other places. I've been in Thailand, and I remember the subway in Bangkok. And I know the subway, unlike Japan or unlike Seoul or China, that the subway was engineered. They used a German engineering firm. So it was a German engineered subway. I'm sure the people who were on the construction project were Thais. And the Thais, I don't know if they're as energetic as the Japanese, industrious as the Japanese, but they're industrious enough. And I don't know to what extent they're going to be developing skills. Maybe they, you know, I don't know. I'm just saying I don't know. But certainly if you have a – they're even if they weren't capable of engineering the system themselves, they're capable of maintaining the system, right? Whereas you do see in Cleveland and Detroit and Jackson and places like that, blacks inheriting systems, inheriting –
And even, even places like South Africa.
Yeah, in South Africa. And not being able to maintain them, and everything falls apart. And, you know, there's obviously there are very intelligent black people. There are very industrious black people. But when you're talking about a society, it's not you're not just talking about individuals. You're talking about the collective. And so the collective industriousness, the amount of work hours that a population is willing to put into it. And also, so that matters. And then also, what percentage of people have the capacity to acquire technical expertise, which I think I said something like technical expertise is the other element. So there you go. I throw it over to you, Philbert.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I guess I would add to that a little bit is that we are in a race war. You know, I mean, just because we're not in a shooting war, right? There's not, you can't pick sides and go, oh, here I'm on this side and I'm going to shoot this side. Like say the Revolutionary War was like, it's not how it works, but you know, at the way I see it, we are at a constant evolution is a race war. I'll just put it that way. So,
yes. And myself as a longtime peace activist, maybe I will say, how about a race competition?
Yes, I guess that's probably a better way of putting it. I mean, yeah, because we're all competing for world resources, you know, at a global level constantly. We're not, yeah, say at war with each other, but, you know, and if we don't form, you know, the meaningful resistance and strong resistance, you know, we're going to see our cities, you know, end up like Jacksonville and Detroit and what you had just described.
Jackson, yeah. Jacksonville.
Jackson, Florida, yes, I'm sorry.
Is doing okay. But anyway, I don't know. I haven't been there for 40 years. Okay, well, I think that's all we have time for. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, I would, again, would just mention if people want to look into the National Alliance, you can go to natall.com. That's NATALL.com. Or you can go to nationalvanguard.org also and read articles about it. And there's tons and tons of good articles, informative. And you don't have to be a member to check all this out for free.
All right. Well, thank you for joining me, Philbert.
Yes, glad to be here. Thanks for having me on again.
And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because big tech, big pharma, and big brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.